was told that I was the first lady IPS officer. But when I went to report to the DG's office, he did not even acknowledge my presence. And when he got up, he says, "Oh, you've come. What will I do with you?"
He mentioned, "I need Kiran Bedi's file to see what can be given to you."
From the bureaucracy, there was a big pushback. Nobody ever made me feel welcome in those days. As an IPS officer, you are trained to handle emergencies. And I do feel that the IPS training, if you do it sincerely, trains you for all kinds of eventualities.
The image of Bihar in media is even the Prakash Jha film, Gangajal, Apsaran and all these that are written. So police officers, IPS officers used to get bribes and mithai boxes.
My own experience with politicians has been, I think caste became a very big issue later on. That everything became caste oriented. The education system in Bihar was very good initially. We all studied there. But gradually, even there, things started creeping in.
Mr. Lalu Prasad Yadav, as a chief minister, your first stint working with him, what was the experience like? Hi, this is Siddharth Ahluwalia. Welcome to the Neon Show. Today, I have with me the author of Madam Sir, Mrs. Manjari Jaruhar. Ma'am, welcome to the Neon Show. So excited to have you today.
Thank you.
And this is the first time we are having an IPS officer. And you were the fifth IPS officer, woman or IPS officer in India, and the first in the Bihar cadre.
Yes.
It must be such an honor to be among the first five along with Kiran Bedi, ma'am.
I don't know whether it's an honor or it was a tough because I was the first one to enter Bihar.
So, would love to start, you know, by your journey, right? And especially the first half of your journey before you became an IPS officer. What was growing up in Bihar back in 1960s like?
Bihar in the 1960s was a very, very peaceful state, a very well-administered state. And there was a lot of emphasis on education. There was a lot of safety. There was never any problem about not going out or doing things. And people were all the bureaucracy was very, very conscious of doing developmental activities. And we had almost everything. There was nothing that we were dependent on in any way on any other state. But my own childhood was a very sheltered childhood. I stayed a lot with my grandparents because my parents were busy in the village and the affairs in the village. So my growing up was extremely sheltered, but with a lot of discipline, lot of love and affection. But everything had to be done in a particular way. If you dressed, what did you eat? With whom did you interact? There was a lot of emphasis on doing well in school and getting good grades. So all that was very well organized by my grandparents for me and my sisters and my other cousins who were staying with him. So growing up, I don't think I was taught anything about the facing life in general or learning any of the skills which would help me in decision making or going out and doing things on my own. All that was not possible because everything was protected, everything was sheltered. If I ever went out, I was chaperoned. We never went for movies or restaurants, though there was a lot of safety compared to what we have. But that is the way young girls were brought up in those days.
And you remember, was there the Bihar capital, Patna, was safe back then?
Yes, absolutely safe. Later on, people would tell me, I mean, of course, I was in the police force myself, but later on, much later on, I realized that people would not allow their wives and all to go out in the night. And one lady particularly told me that they had stopped going for wedding parties and all wearing jewelry. Because if they stopped at a railway crossing, criminals would come and demand the jewelry. So that kind of scare was there. But by that time, I had actually left Bihar. I had moved out. So I would hear these stories. But for us, it was very peaceful. There were girls who would cycle to college and go everywhere. We were very strictly brought up, but my other friends and colleagues were allowed to do a lot of things, go to movies and parties and all. But of course, there were no mixed parties in those days in Bihar. But yes, they were more liberal. Their parents were more liberal than my grandparents. So that is the way it was in Bihar, a very peaceful and a prosperous state.
And once you became an IPS officer and got positioned or stationed in Bihar, right, what was the difference in the Bihar that you grew up in now when you're responsible for administering Patna?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting question. The Bihar in which I grew up was, I am growing up, I am being looked after by my parents, I'm very sheltered, I have to follow certain modes of discipline, certain ways of talking to people, certain ways of handling people. That is the way I was. There was no interaction with men or boys. Extremely, extremely sheltered. But when I went to join as a young IPS officer, I went to Bihar with a lot of enthusiasm. And I was told that I was the first lady IPS officer. And but when I went to report to the DG's office, I have written a lot about it in my book, I was quite crestfallen, I would say, that he did not even acknowledge my presence, and he continued to write whatever he was writing in his file when I marched in. And then when he got up, he says, "Oh, you've come, and what will I do with you? And a lady officer is going to be with you."
He mentioned, "I need Kiran Bedi's file to see what can be given
to
you."
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You remember that. So nice of you to remember. He said, "I'm getting Kiran Bedi's file from Delhi, and then I'll read that and then I'll post you," which I found very odd. I am an IPS officer like all the other men. Five other men had also come to Bihar. But unka posting sham ko ho gaya. They were posted. But I was made to wait because he didn't know what to do with me. So I think that they were still very conservative, and now you see women everywhere, isn't it? But go back to 76. There was no woman in a khaki uniform in Bihar. There were a few lady constables who were appointed on compassionate grounds, and they wore sarees, and they do very small jobs in offices and all, and that number was also minuscule. So to suddenly see a woman in pant and shirt, and that also khaki with a cap and a boot and coming in a jeep, I think it really hit them. And it was beyond their imagination. So wherever I went, huge crowds would follow me in those days. But from the bureaucracy, there was a big pushback. Nobody ever made me feel welcome in those days. Everybody warned me, "Kaise karogi? How will you do it? Ye kaise hoga? Wo kaise kaam hoga? Where will you go? How will you do night rounds?" So there were always doubts about my abilities.
So when you used to face such doubts openly from your seniors, did you come and share it with your husband, who helped you, you know, get self-belief back? Or was it just that you need to prove yourself, determination?
No, at that time, my husband was not with me. He was in another subdivision that was in Ranchi.
Yeah.
I was in Patna. But the only thing, I think, which helped me was my own determination. And even though the DG's office was, you know, pushing me back, my senior SP and the DIG under whom I was trained, they were very keen to train me, and they made me do everything which a male police officer is supposed to do. So there they did not distinguish between a male and a female officer, and I'm really grateful to my DIG and to my senior SP, who put everything in front of me and said that this is what you have to do, this is what you have to do. And they expected me, they would supervise my work quite closely. And I think they also took it as a mission to train me. And I was, of course, determined to learn everything. I was determined to learn anything. So I didn't shirk anything.
But at any point of time, you face that the system is trying to pull you down?
Very often. Very, very often. When I finished my training, I was looking for my first posting as an ASP, Assistant Superintendent of Police. That is what IPS officers are posted as. So all my batchmates were posted, and I was not posted. And then again, I was posted to a CID, a table job, a desk job, I would say. In a small cubicle, I would sit. I had no amenities. There was really no work. Some of my seniors were very sympathetic that I was there, so they would send me some files to read and all. But I never shirked work. So even those few files which came, I recorded whatever was expected of me, whatever they expected, that this is your job, you have to find how the note has been written and how the case is going on. So I would record. And people felt that I was working very sincerely, though I was almost miserable. I was miserable, and very often I would cry also to see that where have I been confined. And, you know, to think that there were six officers who had come to Bihar. My position was three, at number three. Still, you see, there were people behind me, but they have all been given good assignments and I'm made to sit in the CID. So it was very frustrating in those days. But I didn't give up. I kept on saying that mujhe district milna chahiye, I should do a field job. Because in the police, if you don't do a field job in your initial years, then you're considered like a desk job. You know, you would be considered an officer who has mostly stayed in the office.
And when you were posted, you know, some of the stories that you shared, for example, in Bokaro, when you were there, mm-hmm. and when 1984 riots erupted.
Yes.
And for that short period of time, you were on a leave and you came back.
Yes.
But once you came back, you gave everything.
Yes.
That had in your capability to do the right.
Yes.
To the six that had suffered. And Bokaro, you mentioned, had the third highest number of killings of six. 69.
Yes. 69 killings we had, right. So, Bokaro happened when I was not there. I was on leave and Mrs. Gandhi got assassinated. And I was in Bombay. And immediately after that, the riots broke out. Bokaro had a very large Sikh population. And in the past also, when the Golden Temple attack had taken place and those incidents had happened, there had been a simmering discontent, but I had very good rapport with the Sikh families also and with the others. So I made sure that there was proper deployment, there were peace committee meetings, the usual things which you do when you think that there is tension in the town. And I would personally talk to people. So we had averted everything, anything from happening. But when the Sikh riots took place, the anti-Sikh riots took place, I was not there. And the person who was there was a very, very junior officer, and probably he didn't appreciate and nobody expected this to happen. So a lot of people were killed. I, of course, when I heard that I have some, I mean, I got to know about it much later. But in any case, I was supposed to leave that day for Bombay, for Bokaro. So I took the train. There was no flight. There was no mobile phone to get minute-to-minute information. No flights to Bombay. So I was booked on the train and I left by train with two small kids. On the way, I came to know how stations had been devastated and all. When I arrived, I saw that the town was under curfew, and the DIG told me that so many people... By that time, it was not even known how many people were killed. He said some people have been killed, but their families missing, their children missing. So now you take over. And looking at him, I realized that this man has not slept for a few days. And everybody was crowded in a refugee camp in the St. Xavier School. The DIG had taken that decision. And the Christian fathers were very gracious enough to open everything for them, because the school had been closed at that time. So when I arrived there, I arrived home, I just got into my uniform, left my children with the maid, and I just rushed. And then I don't remember when I came home, because everybody clung to me and kept saying that you were not there and this is what has happened and we are glad you've come and all. I had thought people would be angry and everybody would be... even the public would be angry and all. But this was a very different kind of emotion. People clinging on to me and looking for succor. And my officers, they were all young officers. They are all looking at me for some directions as to what to do, because so far they had been only doing firefighting. They had not organized themselves or anything. So I said, first thing first is start, a group starts recording the FIR. And I said, one team was made to go and recover people. Whoever said that my husband is missing, I don't know where so and so is, or some family member is not there, or my want to know about my shop or anything. So this team started doing all that. And as the FIRs were getting registered, if names were coming, I told the district magistrate to extend the curfew, and we started picking up the people in the night itself. So that had a very salutary effect, and things started normalizing. But of course, the families were devastated. So a lot of hand-holding, looking at individual needs, making things available for them, settling them in a new environment. It was like a social work also. So all that I had to handle, that was a very tough time. But today when I look back, I'm glad that I was able to save some things. Though I regret that inadvertently I had just gone for a holiday and something like this happened.
And you mentioned that guilt, which was even not your fault, kept hanging on you for a very long period.
Yes, for a long time. For a very long time, that if I had been there, this would not have happened. But immediately, there was no time to even think like this. Immediate thing was that rescue people, restore confidence, open up the city. It has been under curfew for 3 days. So that was the immediate concern. It's only later on that those cases and all, and many of the things I've written in the book is only through memory, because they impacted me so much. I didn't have any notes to go back to, because I was writing the book only after 13 years. So whatever I've recorded in my book is only by memory. And some of the incidents I remember so vividly that it's difficult.
But you took help of case diaries to write your book from back then?
No, I didn't take. I could not access, because I had already shifted to Delhi. Yes. And I was writing in Delhi. It would have gone to the archives and all. But I did ask one or two officers about some name, or I would remind them of that incident and say, this is the way I remember. Do you know how it happened? They would support me. But I mostly wrote the book sitting in Patna when I was isolated with my mother during the pandemic. So it was just from memory that I wrote.
Well, it must have been quite an experience for you to go through that trauma.
Oh, yes. And I don't know whether my trauma or my husband not knowing what was happening to me, because there was no phone, nothing. And the children at home, yeah. I'm not coming home. They were
How many days
crazy.
You were away from your children at a stretch?
I would, about 3 days definitely I remember.
So the children never knew where you were?
I would come late in the night, have something to eat, sleep, leave early in the morning. So they barely must have seen me coming yeah. in and out. But then there was no interaction. Their schools were also yeah. closed. So it was frustrating for them to be isolated at home. So then I decided to send them to my parents for some time yeah. so that I didn't have to worry about them.
And your parents were a big support during all your service, right? Even when you yes. were posted back to Patna.
Yes. My parents always supported me in times of need. And times of need were when I went for some training program, which was mandatory, I had to do. And some training program I did by choice also, because I said I must do this. Or there were times when I was being transferred from one place to another and somebody needed to look after the children till I yeah. established myself in the new place. So my parents, sometimes my in-laws, sometimes my relatives, they all did support me. It was a
And you especially mentioned
system.
Srivastavs in your book, who were your neighbors?
Oh, yes. I have kept in touch with them even now. They were a big support. They had two boys and they were doctors and they were living next door. So there was just a small boundary wall between both of our houses. So they would sort of just come in whenever I was not yeah. there. I had to give them a phone call and they would come and handle everything.
And you experienced that, right? I think in 1984, you were what, around 35 to 40 years old?
I'm 34 years old.
But 34, 35 is still a very young age, right? to have responsibility of such a city in such a trauma? Do you think that your shoulders were overburdened during that period of time?
See, as an IPS officer, you are trained to handle emergencies. And I do feel that the IPS training, if you do it sincerely, trains you for all kinds of eventualities. And of course, your inner being is also very important. What you are bringing into any service, like your own sincerity, yes, your own passion to for doing the right things, your own values, that also makes a difference in the kind of services a young officer will deliver. Even in your profession, how much you are devoted, how much you are bringing your own value system to the job you are doing, how truthfully you are doing, how sincerely you are doing, all that matters. So in the case of the IPS also, we are trained fully, we are equipped. Because see, IPS, the professional training academy is for 1 year, one full year. And then there is a district training for one full year. So there is nothing which you are not taught. And after doing this, you will get posted as an ASP for a year or year and a half, which is also under the tutelage of a senior SP,
yeah,
but independent charge. So you cannot say that you are not equipped. You are fully equipped. So any emergencies which happen, it can be a natural disaster, like a disaster which happens, earthquake or a flood or anything. So you know what is to be done. And to tell you very frankly, Siddharth, there have been times that when you are posted overnight from one place to another because you have to handle something which had happened there and that officer is removed, then you arrive there, take charge and start immediately functioning with new set of officers. But by then, you have been trained so well and you can always ring up somebody and ask, kya karna hai and how do I go? But that also is not available every time. So you just arrive and you start working. So I think that the IPS training, whether it is the training at the academy and the field training, makes you a very thorough officer.
But in your book, it's such a positive reinforcement of what IPS job in a police job is looks
yes,
like. But we haven't seen that image in a society of police, right?
Yes. That is true.
Why do you think is that? Because there's a disconnect of what the image of the police we as kids and as adults have
yes,
seen and what we see in your book. Like, there's a huge disconnect.
Yes.
Why is that?
Many people do ask me this question, and I think that it is also because of the media. You know, traditionally the media has always portrayed police as something.
But there can't be any smoke without fire.
Yeah, that's what I'm coming to. So they have always portrayed the police as a butt end of all the jokes,
yeah,
cracking jokes at their expense and showing corruption as a...
So few things, what you said, corruption, misuse of power.
Misuse of power, misbehaving with people, not responding positively to situations. These things do happen. It is a fact that in every society there are people who are misfits. And I think such people are there, misfits even in the police. The percentage is very small, but because misfits are not to be accepted, any mistake they make is not a mistake, any deliberate act which they are doing, which spoils the image, that really gets highlighted. That really gets highlighted. But I see a trend changing in the media that now they are portraying police officers who are doing well, who are honest, who are respected. So that change, that shift is happening. But let's take a small district. There'll be two kinds of people there. The people who are really devoted, they are doing their work. And there'll be one or two people who will not be doing the what the public expects you to do. Then the subordinate ranks also. Their misbehavior with the public is very well known, how they are treating. And there are reasons for it, and somehow we are still struggling to correct those behaviors. And as sincere police officers, we can never condone such behavior. But I do feel that the media should be a little more charitable. And today, if the country is being held together, it is only because of the IPS and the police officers. Look at the way we have lost men in Kashmir, or at the borders and their policing, to terrorism, to insurgency in the Naxal problems. We have lost so many officers of all ranks. And we have lost them because they were doing their work sincerely.
Yeah.
So that did not get highlighted. Mm-hmm. But if somebody did some kind of corruption in Jammu and Kashmir, then that really gets highlighted because that is unacceptable behavior.
What has been the media portrayal of police has been, there are very few sincere officers like you and the large part is misusing power.
Yes.
What's your view about that? Is it true or is it most of the 90% of the force is sincere and only 10% of the force is bad apples?
Yeah, I would think like that. 90 is good and they are doing their work and it's only 10% who bring the bad name.
Because you have seen it closely.
Yes, yes. And every time a senior police officer sees such behavior, you must crack down on it. You can't become a party to their behavior.
Because once one chain of commands at the top is corrupted, the entire bottom has to follow that protocol.
Yes, it can happen in a district, that if the district SP is not doing the right things, then everybody down the line adapts very quickly.
Yeah.
But if you give an impression in the beginning itself that this is what I mean business, you have to do this, then the force also works like that. So the IPS is at the cutting edge to provide leadership. So the leadership becomes very important. And if you have not provided a good leadership to the subordinate ranks, then that is the way, that is the place from where the bad behavior and the bad image starts.
Has it happened at any time in your career that you took charge of a district or a station that was fully corrupted and you had to, it was very difficult for you to instill righteousness in that?
The posting to Bokaro itself was done overnight. Because the SP there got into trouble for not handling the constabulary. The constabulary had got into a...
What is constabulary?
The constables. Constables and the junior rank officers. So what had happened in Bokaro was that they wanted to go on free rides in vehicles, taxi vehicles. And the drivers resisted. When the drivers resisted, they had a hot exchange of words, the constables and the drivers and the khalasis. The next thing they did was that the policemen went back to their barracks, they collected hockey sticks, etc., and came back, and there was a free-for-all between the driver, khalasi, and the constables. And on the issue of making payment when they were going on these trekkers. Now, there are these challenging things like when we deploy constables and all because of shortage in those days. Now, these things don't happen because of shortage of vehicles and all. You will say to the constable, go and do duty there. But how is he going to go and do duty there? How will he go? Where will he stay? What will he eat? All that we don't define. And we just give him a letter, a order saying that go and do some law and order duties there. So they also don't know what to do. So they will want a free ride. Then why should the trekker guy give them a free ride? After all, he's also earning his bread through that. So then there was a free for all. And the SP for some reason could not handle it. And it became a major issue. And he had to be transferred out. And I was sent immediately there to take over charge. And I've recorded about it in the book also that how... I was cautioned that don't go to the police lines and be very careful you're going. Because I had been agitating that I should be given a district. I had already done 3 years in the CID when my other batchmates had all done districts. And I was still confined there. And every day I would say that I must be given a district. Because the time span is very little for us. If you don't do your district, then you are gone. So then when they posted me, there were all kinds of apprehensions and how will I manage? And this is what they warned me. When I arrived there, I realized that this could be an issue that they had misbehaved and they may misbehave with me also being a lady officer. And this was my first posting. So I confronted the whole problem straight on in a police sabha about which I have written in my book. I gave them an impression that I'm not going to bear any indiscipline. I said that everybody should be in uniform as long as they are on duty. And evening time, there used to be a lot of crime. So evening time, you know, people would be in jackets and jeans and t-shirt. I said, nothing doing. I was in uniform and everybody else will be in uniform. All wireless sets will be on in the evening because the tendency was to switch off the wireless sets and their walkie-talkies. And the alerts, you know, that night rounds have to happen. Parade will happen. It can't be that on the morning of the parade, you say, I'm sick and don't turn up for parade. It will be regular parade. Then there were regular police sabhas where I would interact with the constabulary. So these things instilled a lot of sense of discipline among the people there.
And as you mentioned, but it was not a position where the district was fully corrupt or the officers were fully corrupt before.
It is never a time when you're fully corrupt. You will always find officers who are willing to work straight, and they are happy to be told what to do because they are also under a discipline. Yeah. You know, we are a hierarchy and a disciplined force. If I tell my driver that you have to keep standing here till I come back and I'm in a meeting for 3 hours, he will not move from that car. Because when I come back, he's there and I'm ready to drive off. Yes. I don't have to tell him what I was doing. If I am going on a raid in the night, the driver has to stand by the car. Or there is a gunman who has to come with me. Or I have to tell them that, okay, take the car that side and sir, go there. Or put some people on a duty by some place, say that you stand here till we come back. Then they can't move out. So that kind of discipline is already enforced in the force. They have to follow what we have to say, what we say. And unless unless we practice discipline, it will be very difficult to do any kind of law and order duties or any kind of anti-crime duties, because then everybody is doing everything else.
And often the media portrays that the politicians are usually corrupt and they influence the IPS officers heavily, or IPS officers who don't listen to them get transferred. Mm-hmm. Does that really happen?
I really think that this is also a choice. If you want to oblige the politician, he will keep on asking you for things. If you make it sure to them that, look, I can do only this much and I will not do beyond this. Because sometimes they ask for reasonable things also. They are not always asking. So there's no need for you to be harsh and treat them impolitely. After all, he's the representative of the people. If he's coming with some problem, you should listen to him. And if you can do something, then do it. If you can't do it, then you should have to explain to him. And I have seen my own experience with politicians has been that I have never been asked to do something wrong.
Okay.
Because probably they know my reputation that I will not do. And maybe they were apprehensive ki lady hai, pata nahi kya karegi. I sometimes give them the benefit of doubt. But there has never been a situation in which I have not
they asked to take a bribe or something, which like the stories in media. Has it never happened?
No, I have never offered a bribe. Only that little incident I told you about them when I was sitting in the thana.
Yeah, and somebody put 10 rupee note.
10 rupee note. That was the only bribe I've thought of. But I have never had this good experience, as
like
I would
the politicians
say.
Never forced that you have to do this, else you will be transferred.
No. I think because I was the only lady officer, they must have been a little apprehensive of telling me that, and they knew I would not do it.
Yeah.
I would not do it.
And the image of the media, the image of Bihar in media is that, even the Prakash Jha's film Ganga Jal, Apharan and all these which are written, that police officers, IPS officers used to get bribes in mithai boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Was it true? You saw it happening in your time during any
other? I have not seen, but I have heard that politicians did ring up so-and-so during recruitment and send them a list that these people have to be recruited. Or that he has been transferred because he did not do this. I did not have these kind of experiences.
And you then, have experience?
And then very soon I moved to the Government of India. So once I moved to the Government of India, I was insulated from these kind of pressures, I think.
But tell us more about the Ganga Jal incident that happened during your time.
Mm-hmm. That was a very, very challenging. It was tough. and it needed a lot of mental discipline to handle those cases. So this blinding of people were taking place in Bhagalpur because it was really crime infested, and the criminal activity was of a kind which you would not hear. Criminals would pick up victims, cut their body parts and throw them into the Ganga, in the river, so they were never found. They would kidnap people, mutilate them and then take the ransom and return them. They would rape women in front of their families. And there were all kinds of really heinous crimes they were doing. And police could not do anything because they did arrest them and send them to jail. But the magistrate and the judge, they were so scared of keeping them anywhere, and they would threaten them also. And how protected can anybody be if you are determined to do something? So they would give them bail. Now they come out on bail, then again do the same things. So these kind of things were happening. So the policemen, the subordinates, and I'm sure the seniors must have also connived with that. And the seniors must have also connived and not connived but approved silently, that they decided to take out the eyes. You know, we have these things, what is called takua. It's a big needle, thick needle, used to puncture a hole in files and tie it up with a string. So that is available in all police stations. So they gouged out the eyes with that, and then they poured acid. So it was really heinous, and I don't know why they did that. Perhaps better would have been to shoot them and finish them off. But then disposal of a body and all is also different. Anyway, what was the psychology? I don't know. But when they did too many, and in one night they blinded 9 people, there was a big hue and cry, and then everything came out in the open, and it came to the parliament, and then a committee had to be instituted to inquire into these blinding cases. So a senior DIG was being sent, and that was the time when I was SPCID, when I was every day feeling frustrated that I had not been given a field job. So there was a SP who was drafted into this, and I was also drafted in this team. And I was drafted only because the DIG had he had trained me, and he knew that I could write well, and you know, there would be lot of work to be recorded and all. So he thought that I would be doing it properly. So I was also drafted, and also because I was a spare SP, I had really not much work in the CID. So they said, she has experience, she's a hardworking person, she knows how to write well. I think that this is what they must have thought. And I was put in that group. Now, why it was challenging was that the blinding was done by young officers, and they were all police officers. These officers were supported by the public. The public was in full support of them. When we arrived there, they were raising slogans against us. Why have you come to inquire? They are our saviors. So it was that on one hand, the public felt that the police had done the right thing. It was a challenge for me because I'm a police officer and I'm writing, going to inquire against police officers knowing that they have blinded. And then the general environment around, everybody wanted to protect the officers. Everybody wanted to protect what had happened. So they would put pressure on other officers who knew me, on my family, that I should not.
Your father got a call.
My father got a call. That make sure that she doesn't write anything damaging. So this atmosphere happened. Again, I'm go back to myself, of my old self, and I think about the kind of discipline and values and everything I'd been brought up with, that I said, let me do whatever is right. I thought really consciously. In fact, once I had to tell somebody off that, say that I don't want to blacken my hands. I'm a very young officer. I had just put in about 8 years of service. Yeah. I said, I don't want to do anything wrong, because I also realized that if the case goes to the courts and all, they will going to grill me. What am I writing? Am I writing anything false? So I stuck to whatever it was.
And then what was the final conclusion of that?
So the final conclusion, we did find that the subordinate officers had blinded. But just sending the report is not enough. Things have to be taken to the other logical conclusion. In our case, in Bihar, by then this kind of thing has set in where everything is being handled very casually. So though we recorded and sent everything, very soon I was transferred, many of our officers was transferred in due course. So what happened to those cases, how it they were pursued in the court and all, we don't know. The courts have a huge backlog, what happened. But I'm told later on, because I soon after I was transferred to Bokaro, I went there and from there I went to the Government of India, that few people were suspended. There was some compensation given to these people. So some good happened out of that.
But it had stopped or it still continued the blinding?
No, they stopped. They stopped immediately after this thing came out in the open.
But there was never a FIR or the policemen who were accused, they were never put in jail or cases?
No, they were suspended or not. They were suspended.
They were just suspended from their duties.
We didn't have that kind of evidence to say that so-and-so blinded so-and-so.
Okay.
Then only could an FIR have been granted. But we could say that, oh, this happened in this police station under this man's jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm. Another case, I think, which another Prakash, I don't know why, because he's from Bihar, he is able to make such movies which have impacted Bihar, was what you mentioned in your book is Apharan, the kidnappings, which became prevalent in Bihar.
Yeah, the kidnappings then started happening when I was DIG. When I became DIG in 94, these kidnappings had just started happening, kidnapping for ransom.
So and you mentioned in one of the incidences that you even crossed Ganga on a night or you used to do the raids crossing Ganga.
No, not Ganga. That was when I was in Bokaro. There were a lot of petty crimes happening in Bokaro. In a small city, these things impact a lot of people. So we had a spate of dacoities. Dacoities meaning they come, ransack the house and carry away everything and put people under threat. So these were happening and, there's a huge cry. It was a small township. It's a steel town with little bit of non-steel workers also there. So when these crimes started happening, I said we must stop it. And we came to know that there was a Garga Nadi. It was called Garga. It's a small stream. And then there was a hill. So criminals would come down the hill when it became night. And the Garga can be crossed. It was not a very heavy stream. They would cross the stream, commit crime and go back. And there was a timing when water would be released in the Garga for plant work, etc. So then, nobody could cross the river for a very long time. The police force could not do it. So then I started that, we will start raiding. And in the first case itself, we had a very good breakthrough. We recovered all the material in one of the houses. So then I made it into a regular habit that we must cross and organize raids that day or do patrolling. Once in a while, I would go myself. Other times, the force would be sent. And that brought down the crime figure heavily in Bokaro. That stopped it. It was not the Ganga, it was the Garga.
Got it. Huh. And tell us about how did you stop apharans or kidnappings in Bihar?
No, I don't think that really stopped apharan and kidnapping. I had only one or two in those times. And very soon I left. So I don't have any direct experience of stopping kidnapping. But yes, any case which happened, we pursued it to the last straw. I mean, we would not let anybody go. And a couple of cases happened. And in one case, we did recover everybody. And I don't think that...
I think you mentioned in your book, within 24 hours, you were able to recover...
That person.
The kidnapped person.
Yes.
It was a businessman.
It was a businessman, Mr. Saurogi. He was kidnapped. That case I remember very well. So now, of course, there are a lot of tools because now you can trace the phone call and all that. Those days we didn't have. We only had a system of what is called mukbir in the police, that they are informers. They will inform you as to what had happened and the senior SP and all these people had good contacts and they only helped them to recover this.
But there are some cases of kidnappings that you worked on and were successful in recovering without any harm.
Yes, there were many cases, but by then I had left Bihar. In my time, I only remember that Sarogi's case, but later on many more cases happened, I'm told. But by then I was already working with the government of India and it had become almost like a business. So in many cases, people did get released, but that was mostly for ransom, I think.
Yeah.
It was mostly for money, quick money.
So really after like 1995, you were posted in central postings mostly.
Yes.
Right. So you have been out of touch with what's been happening in Bihar.
Yes, though I kept going as senior levels, but Bihar I didn't go back to. I think after 94, I did not go back to Bihar.
Good. One thing which, you know, Bihar has been the epitome of, you know, education in India. The Nalanda University was there, which got burnt by Mughals almost 1,000 years ago.
Yes.
And now the government is reviving Nalanda. But why it has gone in such shambles? Is it because it's a state which is towards a corner of a country, or education has not been the de facto, focus of the families in Bihar? Why has the state gone, like, Bihari logo ke liye, it's a negative term that ye Bihari hai.
I know Bihar sunk into very bad stage.
Some of the great writers, even your family has made up of the best writers the country
has.
We had
everything. There was nothing to lose. We had so many industries in Bihar. Yes. Ranchi itself was the HEC.
Rich of minerals, rich of natural resources.
In Barauni, we had so many things. Ranchi, Bokaro steel plant, Jamshedpur. Yeah. And yet, have not developed the way other states developed. I think caste became a very big issue later on. That everything became caste-oriented. And your caste was more important than your abilities, I think. And the other thing which I can think of is that people started leaving the state and mostly for education. And anybody and everybody could get out, could afford. They went out to study. And once they went out to study, they never came back. And the education system in Bihar was very good initially. We all studied there. But gradually, even there, things started creeping in, because I remember my BA exams went on for 4 years. The Jayaprakash movement had just started, and the students would walk out of class. It was a
movement. Mandal Commission, you mentioned in your book.
So many things started happening that my exams for BA, which would have finished in 2 weeks, took a whole year to finish. So that finished the education system in Bihar. All the time there is delay, 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 and then teachers got disinterested. People were appointed not because of their abilities, but because of their caste. So all these things combined together, but basically education and lack of education and caste becoming uppermost in handling any situation in the country, in the state. That spoiled the whole scenario there.
And why did caste become so prominent in Bihar?
That I cannot answer. I really don't know.
You mentioned in your book, right, at one point of time when you were SP, your whole seniors were made up of castes and you were getting a transfer to the central position in the government. And people are asking you that not to go because it's such a fix.
Yes. That was true. That is true. They said don't go. But somehow as a family also, my father never encouraged this, and I was also not bogged down by this caste system and all. And I was trained by mentors and people who did not think that because I belong to a particular caste, I should not be trained other than them. I was lucky. I think I was lucky, and my own mental orientation was not towards that because of my upbringing. So that, I think, helped.
But people mentioned to you, even in your police force, it was such a favorable time that 4 or 5 of your senior officers were all of the same caste. That don't leave it.
Yes, yes.
It was a progressive time to be there.
So I think when I was so junior, I wouldn't have understood what were the planning and all going on at the top level, because I was not I was in the field, and what was plotted at the top level, I don't think I would have understood at that time so well.
And tell us about, you know, you mentioned that Mr. Lalu Prasad Yadav as a chief minister, your first stint working with him, what was the experience like over a period of time?
So I worked under him from 91 to 94. From 91 to 92, not so directly because I was just there and I was an SP in the intelligence branch. But from 92 to 94, I was DIG Patna. And that was the time when I was directly, because, you know, so many things are happening in Patna and he would issue instructions, keep telling you to do things. And that time I felt that he brought a new kind of thinking. He was very hands-on. He was everywhere. Earlier, I had not seen a chief minister arriving at a crime spot, arriving to handle a law and order situation. He was like that. And even giving instructions. When I was posted in Bokaro steel plant, I don't remember the chief minister, even if he arrived, he would be sitting and discussing that what are the exact things which have to be done. After the anti-Sikh riots, the chief minister was Mr. Chandrasekhar Singh. He was a very good chief minister. He came and his idea was to put like a bomb. He told me that I had done a good job and people were happy and that I should keep doing it. So it was like that. But Mr. Lalu Prasad would come and say, ye bhi hona chahiye, ye bhi hona chahiye, yaise hona chahiye. It was like that. And I felt that he was not asking me to do anything wrong. Whatever he was telling me was like a way of advice and very down-to-earth advice.
Tell us a couple of stories that you remember from his period of time that you have been part of.
One incident about which I have written in my book also was that I had seen the Bhagalpur blindings, and I had seen that when police officers don't work for the right things, they can do wrong thing. They can be on the wrong path. So one incident was that there was an SP whom I heard was bumping off criminals.
What does bumping off mean?
If he found a criminal who was committing crime again and again, he would have him killed, disposed of his body and all. I had no direct evidence, but I used to hear, because nobody comes to complain about a criminal. So, but once there was an incident in Patna city where a young child was, I'm told he was about 14 years.
You mentioned he was 14 years.
About 14-15 year old kid who had been bumped off, and they said that there was found a pistol beside him, and he had run away with some money or purse or something like that. Because I've written in the book about it. So the local people came and said that this was not he was not a criminal. He was just a
petty thief.
Petty thief. Maybe he was a young boy, and this is what has happened, and it is not wrong. So I rang up the local officers and I told them that this should not be done and it should be stopped immediately. So even in the meeting, I could make out that some people had not liked it, but I insisted that this has to stop and I'm not going to be a party to it at all. So I think the person, the SP who was doing these things, must have not liked my passing a blanket order like that, because I called a meeting and I said in the meeting that nothing more.
And you were the IG then?
I was the DIG, but now I said nothing like this can happen. I could see that there was a simmering discontent about what I was saying, but because of hierarchy, nobody said anything. But very soon, I got a call from the chief minister saying that what I'm trying to do is not right, and maybe the crime will not get controlled if we don't do this. And in the past, these things have been done, and this is the way maybe crime can be controlled. So something snapped inside me and I hit back. I said that this is not something which I'm going to approve of. And I remember
you mentioned in your book, it was a late night call when Mr. Lalu
Prasad. Early morning call.
Mr. Lalu Prasad Yadav called you, and even your husband woke up seeing what is happening.
What is happening? That conversation is going on. So I said, no, I'm not going to allow this, and I'm telling you that you have a young son, even I have a young son, and if he does something petty, he cannot be killed, and this is not right to happen. He became extremely quiet, and then he said, okay, and then he disconnected. But after that, there was no incident during my tenure.
And the SP was also transferred.
And then very soon, not immediately, But very soon, I think he was also transferred. So I thought that when you tell politicians the right things, maybe he was always said ki, sorry, nahi karenge to control nahi hoga crime, so he believed what he was being told. But when I told him this and when he reacted, I feel that he heard me. And all politicians are not bad, and if you have to explain things to them, and logically they will listen to you.
So, and once you got posted to center, tell us about your core experiences or two or three stories from your posting at the center that changed you and made you a better person. You mentioned about in this podcast, the Bhagalpur incidents of Gangajal, right? The Bokaro incidents. What were some of those stories, the equivalent stories at your working at the central government?
Yes, in the central government, when I came to work in the CISF.
If you can also tell our audience what is CISF, because...
Yeah, when I was first selected to work at the Central Industrial Security Force, which handles all industrial undertakings. They protect all industrial undertakings. And gradually their work has been expanded, and they are now deployed at the airports, at metros, at government buildings, because threat to these things increased over a period of time. In my time, threats were only to the public sector undertakings and union created problems, or the villagers created problems, because the public sector undertaking was occupying their land, their society. So officers and all, you know, plant officers felt shaky about going and working, felt insecure about their families. So CISF was conceived to protect the plant and also to protect the workers and the machinery and all. So in the first instance, when I came to see Bokaro, a very ugly incident had happened there also, where there was a clash between the CISF and the plant, between the CISF, the workers in the plant, and the villagers. All three had had a major clash. And the CISF was found guilty of abetting theft of plant coke, which is a very important ingredient in coal in steel making. And the villagers also used to steal, but when they were getting stopped by the CISF, because CISF was not allowing them to steal, but they were allowing the plant people and in connivance to take out good material, there was this simmering discontent and there was a huge clash. So when I arrived there, I was also the commandant there was, the DIG there was suspended and he was removed, the commandant was suspended. So in that situation, I was asked to join there. So when I joined there, the first thing was to control the criminal activities of my own force. So I reorganized them. I made them do now, get them into a proper discipline, because it's very important for the force to know that you are looking at them. You are looking at their welfare, you are looking at their discipline, and you are very strict. So all these messages have to go together. So started parades, interaction with them. Their facilities were very meager. Ask the plant to do this for them. Give them proper barracks. Remove people from all kinds of idiotic postings, make them do only work which is protection of the plant. So all this put a sense of discipline and a commitment to protecting the plant. So this was a kind of challenging thing that, you know, I had never worked in a paramilitary. They have a lot of discipline. There is a very strict hierarchy. And these things I learned and I inculcated. Because of my own mental makeup, I could realize that this is what is, they have become very loosely administered, and that is why all these things have crept in. So that is one thing I introduced, regular parade I would go for, I would do night rounds even when I was handling a paramilitary, where people thought that madam will not be coming to do parades, made all the officers responsible for the post. So all this had a very salutary effect. So some of these interesting things, you know, completely the management then dependent on me for doing anything inside the plant, which was a very big thing, because you're working closely with a plant which has about 40,000 workers and you have to protect them with about, say, 21, 20, 100 people. And then overnight I was transferred from the Bokaro steel plant to the headquarters. And that is the time the...
And where is the headquarters?
In Delhi. And that is the time I was very upset because my younger son was in class 10. Yeah. My elder son had just gone to college. When I came, why was I being transferred like this? So that is what you have asked me earlier, that the DG said, jungle mein mor na ja kisne dekha, yeah, that you should come and work here in the Government of India. You will get better experience and better exposure, because he had inspected my offices and had often sent me on very sensitive assignments. So when I came to work with the in Government of India, that yes, then I saw again that the CISS was spread all over the country. It was not confined to just Bokaro where I was working.
Yeah.
And then I saw the variety of jobs which they were doing. I got a chance to see almost all the public sector undertakings. I went to ports, I went to seaports, I went to airports we didn't have at that time. I went to all the major oil rigging places, major mines I saw in the country, major units of BHEL, Bharat Heavy Electric Limited. So they were all doing very, very unique and very specific things. Every plant was doing something very specific. And I realized that there was a world beyond just ordinary policing and then, you know, your interaction with the management. And my whole thing was that because we are there to protect the plant, we should work closely with the management. We must understand their problems and try to solve them. So that was a new beginning for the force also. They realized that working with the plant people is better than just working in a vacuum.
And you mentioned in your book, like, majority of the incidents where the police is associated with a plant, the police becomes more relaxed and becomes unionized rather,
yes,
than upgrading the plant workforce to a more
that
sector discipline.
That was in the initial stage at Bokaro Steel Plant. That is what I felt. And I also felt that on one night there was a theft of plant material from the boundary wall. CISF personnel who were inside were throwing things outside. And people who were outside were off duty picking up and taking them to sell it. This was complete a case of theft. So I was on tour and my IG came to inform me that this is what has happened. And 14 people were caught doing this. So the minute I came back, I suspended them. And one innovative thing which I did on my own was that I put them through a disciplinary proceeding day to day. It was unheard of. And I segregated all these 14 people in 14 different places and earmarked 14 officers that day to day inquiry will be conducted against them. So every day they would meet for 2 hours, conduct an inquiry, and at the end of it, they were all found guilty because they had been caught. And I dismissed all 14 of them. So that was, you know, a very, very unique experience for many officers in the force. They did not realize that this could be done. And many people asked me, how did you do it? And I had to explain to them that this is what I did. And after that, I never had any trouble with the force. And then my reputation also got understood that she is not going to tolerate any nonsense from anybody, and that if a force person is doing something wrong, I will have them punished. So in a paramilitary force, discipline is very important.
Tell us, you saw the Indian government in 1970s, both state and Indian government, and you worked over a large period of your later part of your career with Indian government. How is the government today versus in action, in policy making, versus the government that you came to work for the first time in 1995?
Towards the end of my career in 2010 and all, I did feel that things had become very, things were not moving. We had to often, you know, I was heading by then a large force and, you know, we needed to take many quick decisions. So decisions would not be taken and things would be lingering. And the force needed things and we were not having enough money to handle everything. It was a big constraint. There were so many things which we wanted to do for the force, but we couldn't do. This was in the central government where the the government was more liberal. And in the state, it was really tough because we didn't have, there was an acute shortage of funds always and reluctant to give anything to the police force. But now I find, which I read and I see and I
think. Your juniors are posted, which you train.
Yes, my juniors are posted, which I train. I feel that the government is really supportive and willing to give anything if you deliver. So people are able to achieve a lot. I mean, look at what has happened in Kashmir. When I was there, we suffered so many setbacks in Kashmir because we were not but properly equipped at that
which,
time.
From which year to which year was that?
I think that 94 onwards, I was in the government of India.
Yeah.
And I would keep hearing things. And then I was in the CRP from 2000 to 2001 when I was going to Kashmir also to see the forces and all. And those days, terrorism had started in Kashmir. So they were not properly equipped to handle all that. And the men needed to be also trained, upgraded in every way.
Yes.
So government took a long time to do all that, I think.
But you feel right now India is at a much better position than you had seen in the past?
Oh, definitely. Definitely, I feel that we are in a better position. I see the kind of equipment and I see the kind of training which is being done for officers and for the men. All kinds of trainings abroad they are being sent for, equipped. The communication equipment which we have all state-of-the-art things now available.
And are we at par with the Western countries in that yet, or still a far way to go?
I would say we are almost at par. We are almost. All major heinous crimes in the country we are solving these days, I find. Even then, without any of these things, we were able to. But now the quality of crime has also changed. There's so much of crime, cyber crime and crime of drugs and terrorism and everything getting linked. All that, you know, with the kind of technology which is being used, AI and things, that has impacted the level of solving crimes.
And you feel that the kind of time and effort that you had to put in to make a policy level change in the past when you were leading on that front today?
Oh, yes. I definitely think that from what I see, I don't have direct experience. Yes. In the past, it would take a long time to take a decision. And in the paramilitary forces, we had a little more liberty to take decision because DG could take many decisions. But if I had to go to the government of India, it would take time. And but better than in the state, definitely better than the state. In the state, it would never happen. Too much of politics going on, caste and money and all kinds of inhibitions in taking bold decisions. In the government of India, they would take a decision, but it take a longer time. And now I find that things are changing so fast that they are taking decisions also faster. That's what I hear.
States can't be much left behind the center. So I hope someday Bihar would also catch up.
I think we are already pushed back a lot in Bihar. I travel to other places. What is the kind of stuff which people are doing in other states, the kind of work which women police officers are doing. It is amazing. It is amazing. All kinds of things for protecting women, for solving their crimes, all kinds of steps they are taking. But in Bihar, we have been left far behind.
I think one of the reasons is like West Bengal and Bihar, they have different kind of politics from beginning.
Maybe. Even Jharkhand, I worked in Jharkhand. We began very well. Mr. Babulal Marandi started very well, but soon he was removed and then it has never been the same.
Yes.
There was a lot of stability. In fact, people say that it is Jharkhand is doing better than Bihar.
Yeah. But they have never come to prominence or center. Like Tamil Nadu has seen so much. Southern seats, for example.
Andhra. Even the Uttarakhand and Chhattisgarh were created along with Jharkhand, but these have done much better.
Yeah, so hopefully they will catch up seeing the development at center. Ma'am, your story has been such an inspiration, not only for women, but for also people in tier 2, tier 3 cities, that if you set your mind, sky is the limit. And for parents, right, with daughters, it's an example that you should not set the boundaries.
Yes, yes, I definitely think so.
Let the daughters discover themselves, because many times they are more capable than your sons.
Yes, it is possible.
And once, if you let a daughter realize her potential, she can set an entire next generation of family at such a high level of potential that you can't even imagine what will happen next.
Yes, yes, that is absolutely true.
And I think India still lacks far behind in women participation in workforce, right? I think we are even behind Bangladesh today, right? Your example, your story, thank you for publishing the book, Madam Sir. if it wouldn't have got out, right, it wouldn't have been example for women that,
yes,
you know, they have to be a part of the workforce, just not for themselves, but for the ecosystem, for the country, to make it happen.
In fact, a lot of women police officers who have read the book have talked to me. Many of them I have not met personally, but have talked to me that the book enables them to handle some of the situations in which they are placed themselves. So one person rang up to say that I was ready to even give up my job. I was so frustrated till I read your book. And then I realized that you have brought up two children and there are ways of handling the family and the job. And now I'm really inspired that I can also continue. So I think it has made a difference to people, my book. And I hope that not only the book, but in general, I think that women have become more aspirational. And parents also have become very aspirational for women, for their daughters, and even for their daughter-in-laws, though the numbers are very minuscule. So, and women are doing well wherever they have gone, even in our service. Now the numbers are huge. Whereas in 72, we had just Kiran Bedi. In 76, when I joined, there were only 6. This time about 32 women IPS officers have passed out from the academy. So the numbers have become really big.
Would love to see in India where equal number of women officers are there in the academy as men.
Yes, yes. The numbers are still very small. And in the subordinate ranks also there is reservation. There is in the government of India 33% reservation for women in the other ranks, meaning constables, sub-inspectors and all. But if broadly if I say that the paramilitary forces are about 30 plus lakhs now, the women would be perhaps only 10,000.
Which is very sad.
With reservation. And in the states, we've had a reservation for such a long time, 30%, but overall percentage would be only 5% or so in the states. The women are hesitant to come because not many know about it and they think that, oh, it's only brawn and not brains. But wherever they are now competing, they are competing at equal footing. Now, ITBP, which is deployed above 10,000 feet, all their deployments, women have joined there also. So government is making a very conscious effort, government of India now, to in every field to push recruitment of women.
And I hope one day India could see like 30-40 women percent participation women in workforce.
Yes.
Right now it's in single digits only.
Only in single digits, absolutely.
Thank you so much, ma'am, for recording this podcast, for sharing your story so candidly, and for writing the book. We are so grateful to you for bringing about this change.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming and taking this recording. Thank you.